Let's go on to the next chapter and read 8 verses.
Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, who had been raised from the dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who should betray him, Why was not this ointment sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bore what was put in it. Then said Jesus, Let her alone, for the day of my burial hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with you, but me ye have not always.
All right. The first verse here, of course, is very significant for several reasons, which we will just, as we later get into the subject matter, we'll try to touch on. But now we have a time frame. 6 days before the Passover. Before what Passover? What aspect?
The feast.
I think it's the feast. Before the feast of the Passover. Because the emphasis in the nation has shifted from the killing of the lamb. That became relatively insignificant. It was the feast that they had after the lamb was slain and cooked. That at the table they went through these various rituals in connection with the eating of the herbs and the drinking of wine and other things. And now it tells us that Jesus was in Bethany at this time. 6 days before that he is in Bethany. And he ties in John, the account, that this is where Lazarus had died in this town. And that he had raised him from death. And that there they made him a supper. That is in Bethany. We have to keep that emphasis in mind. That in Bethany they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. All right. Now that second verse. Comments. Well, it's just stating that the word sat, but that we read, is not sitting chair in the normal sense. The word is not used that way. When they had meals, it was in a reclining position, whenever and whatever. Yes?
It almost seems that this is being spoken, that Lazarus sat at the table with them, that this is something different than what has happened in the past. And I wonder, before we were talking about whether Lazarus was like a younger brother or whatever, and I wonder if Eve, and also we were also talking about whether he was a disciple before he was raised from the dead. I wonder if he is the status changed since he was raised, whether he either had more of a standing, say, in the community, or that now he was a disciple, and so now he was sitting at the table rather than sitting at the table.
Well, all right, there's a couple thoughts. That's an observation that certainly would be a logical one. But first we want to know about this house, because certainly when they had the supper, it probably was in the home. It allows No, no, that's something else. That's something else. But it does, it is worded in a way as though it's saying it may not be Lazarus' house. But certainly it does say it's Mary's house, Martha. Yes, because of the serving. And it is their home. I mean, there's indication in that. The supper has been prepared. And has been suggested that they could take the liberty, these three, including Lazarus, of Lazarus sitting at the table with them next to him, because of the fact that it's a family involved, where normally you would have to wait and see where you would be placed. So it's saying that on this occasion, being it's in Mary and Martha's home, that Lazarus is seated, as it were, next to Jesus, because of his recent experience. Wouldn't you want to be as close as possible after that experience of being raised from death? You would want to take advantage to be as close to the one who was the cause of your renewed life. And of course, this would be a turning point, definitely, in Lazarus' relationship with Jesus, that even though before there was a close rapport, Jesus liked Lazarus very much, now it's even closer. And now we feel that he's beginning the path of becoming actually a disciple in the fuller sense. So that
wouldn't it seem to imply maybe there were just enough people where Lazarus could also sit, but the other two, both Martha and Mary, Martha who was serving and Mary who wasn't, she was just there, was probably having other intentions, but there would be just so many people that could sit at this table too, maybe.
Well, I think the custom normally would be that they would favor the men guests at that occasion, the custom of the land at that time being such. I don't think so, but we don't know. I don't know. We can't. The only thing here that seems to be important is that it says Martha served. Mary's there because she does something. So here, Mary and Martha and Lazarus, whom he raised, is there. So these are important parts. And then that supper is being served, and a certain incident is about to occur. It does make a point, not about who sat at the table, but that Lazarus did sit. That it does bring to attention, not about the other. And that he sat next to Jesus. And that we have already discussed, the possible purpose of that, and the liberty with which he could avail himself of that privilege, because of being a family more or less oriented gathering, and neighbors and friends, possibly. But then it says, Mary had a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. And then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Now, going back, we see what Mary has done. She saved up a treasure chore. Now, whatever her motive might have been originally, way back when she gathered this spikenard, it was certainly a treasure. And here she expends it, all on this one occasion, to anoint Jesus. And we get the inference of the cost that it was 300 pence. That's Judas's appraisal of the value of that ointment. And That would be then equivalent to what today?
A year's salary.
That's right. A whole year's salary. On this going down the drain, as far as they would, I'm thinking from the standpoint of they see this and they know the value of this, and here it's poured on the feet. And what happens to it after that? See? But not realizing that that was more important, that act, than to think of it from a commercial standpoint or evaluation. So we can see it would be an astounding experience. Right? Yes?
Brother Frank, in those times, what would be like the purpose of having that kind of appointment? Or, you know, I mean, it seems like it's such an expensive thing just to even have in the house. What purpose was it used for? Or?
Well, there could be various reasons. It depends on the motive of an individual. For instance, sometimes it's used as like a perfume. Others would store it from the standpoint that as a people, there's an uncertainty with regard to conditions in the land. It's under Roman occupation. There's been a history of great turbulence, and even under Pilate, already there was a disturbance that Jesus mentioned earlier, where several died and were put by Pilate very much abruptly to death, showing that there, and this would be like Jews and other nations, they save diamonds. They store up a treasure chest of diamonds because they know wherever they go, it could be converted to currency. Where if you saved up American dollars, those dollars might be worth nil in another country at another time. But a diamond has always had a sort of a stable value in whatever land and can be converted conveniently to the currency of the land. So I think this is like inbred in the people to have some sort of bank account, and that this would be served as a bank account, basically. Yes?
I don't know if I'm mixing this up, but I know they were even burned incense in many of these lands. Largely, sanitary-wise, they did not have the available conditions that we have to kill odors and to for cleanliness. And I would suppose even a little bit of this could be used even in that sense, too, make a place smell a little more refreshing.
That could be very well, because as a fumigant, but not a fumigant in the sense of like the garbage disposal, because you would use other things. You'd use sulfur and other types of things, or fire, other methods. But when you'd go into a home, the wealthy, say in India, even today, where there are some places where, because of the poverty and so forth, that their unpleasant odors arise. But if you walk into the house and they're burning incense, it dulls any other extraneous odor. It's gone. You smell the odor of that which is being either burned or being splashed or anointed on some objects, on curtains or whatever it might be. It would then cast a pleasant odor, not to our noses, but to the Oriental, yes. So it would be a perfume or a fumigant, or in exchange for money. These are just a few of the possibilities. And I think if it was just a perfume, it would be an awful lot to save for just that one purpose. It could be easily taken a little of it for that other purpose, but I think its value is what was in mind, generally speaking. And then people want to get married, and there's a dowry involved. Oh, there's some other. And there's other things, and the woman doesn't want to be too dependent on the husband, who might turn out to be not as good as desired. It gives them a feeling of independence. of security from that standpoint. So there's many motives that it could be. Where that isn't what is the point here is a great value is expended at a moment's notice and apparently to natural reasons a waste using human philosophy of reason. All right. Anything else? Anybody else? Yes?
Was spikenard also one of the ingredients used in for burial?
Yes.
With all the spices and all?
Yes.
Is that one of them?
That's a fumigant again, see. Myrrh is also used in connection as a fumigant, too, and a preservative. So she does this, and it tells us that the whole house would be, well, you can imagine, to take the whole thing and expend it, that house would be just, and I think when they said filled with it, it would mean that it would become so powerful and so overbearing that even from that standpoint, why couldn't I only use a little of it instead of the whole thing? Because the concentration now is the room is just filled with it. And it makes that a point. And so in thinking on this, they would think of it as a waste from that standpoint also. Not only the monetary value, but it's too much. It's more than necessary. This helps us then appreciate our Lord's remarks in connection with that occasion. Now, but before we come to that, it first tells us in verse 4 that one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, said, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Now, let's consider his remark.
Sounds very noble.
Yeah, that's right. Wouldn't that seem to be a very sensible argument in view of all this? Couldn't that have been like converted to money? And look at the value. It would help. How many poor would be helped by that? But you see, this type of reasoning, we have to watch out for ourselves in our own reasoning. You cannot equate Jesus with the poor, see, that which he brought. He explains it that way. The poor you have with you always, but me you have not always with you. So it's a false sense of appraisal. Yes?
Judas is also, I think, trying to find fault so that he can justify his actions later on.
Well, he was displeased to see that money go down the drain because John tells later he was a money mad. He was a thief and a robber, and he was the treasurer, held the bag. Not that there's anything wrong with being treasurer, but if you have that disposition of a thief and a robber, then you have to be careful that you're not thinking of that for some other ulterior motive that perhaps would benefit yourself. So he has other motivation, but it would sound very plausible. And now this shows that in amongst Christians, sometimes false reasoning is used on certain matters. We're not talking on this matter. But some people give, they're very generous, very magnanimous with regard to other people's property, other people's things. That which they don't sacrifice, which is not a sacrifice to them. They can control your life. They can write your will for you. They can do a number of things. They're looking ahead on certain things. It's greed and other problems that are involved. But it would sound very good. Why not make your will for the Lord's cause? See, doesn't that sound very... But the thing is, each individual has to make up their mind of their responsibility, and there are extenuating circumstances in the life of every individual as to they are a steward, and you're not to tell them what to do. That's between them and the Lord, and what you do is between you and the Lord. But there are people who enunciate very nice platitudes, but it involves what others do without expense to themselves. And that we have to be careful of, that we're not a, that we're not either the originator of such suggestions, or either that we're not the beneficiaries of such a suggestion, that these motives have to be carefully guided. This is where Judas is a flaw in his character. We suggest that he might have been had the greatest potentiality of the 12 original apostles, that Judas was at the top, really, in ability, capability. But that flaw is devastating. Yeah, brought him to ruin. Paul took his place, because Paul had capabilities, great potential capabilities, but wholly devoted to the Lord's service and according to the Lord's will. Yes?
They have had many similarities to this day. They're all each apostle represents certain characteristics, right?
Yes. Now it says, this said he not that he cared for the poor. See, he didn't even care for the poor, but he gave the... But because he was a thief, had the bag, and bare what was put therein. And who knows, he slipped his own hand in there occasionally. Now the next thing. Any comments on this?
I was thinking, not a word came from Martha, or from Lazarus. And this is a family affair. They were perfectly willing to see that it should be that used too, which is very nice.
Yeah. That's right. Any other comment? Yes?
I thought it was gone. Well, if yours is on this point, because mine's on a different point.
Well, sort of related. Yours is there were two reprint articles making a comparison, sort of suggesting that this expenditure, the putting of the ointment on Jesus' feet instead of selling it for money, helps incite Jesus' greed. And then a companion article, just a few pages later, mentioned the 30 pieces of silver that was just shortly thereafter that Jesus transacted for. And in the earlier article, it said that the 310 could be equivalent to $6 or the year's labor. But then it said the 30 pieces of silver would have been equivalent to $200 to $300. If this is correct, would those 30 pieces of silver then have been equated to 33 to 50 years worth of labor? In terms of the dollar value matches, I didn't think 30 pieces of silver were that much money.
Well, they're not that much, as said, not 30 times. They may be. Because if you take 1 cent, 1 pence, being a day's labor, well, one piece of silver is certainly more than 1 pence. But how much more? That's the point. No, I don't think that it would be 50 or 60 years labor. No, oh, nowhere near that. But more. It would be more value. And not too much difference. I don't think there's too much difference, and I have reasons for it based on the Old Testament, not the New Testament, because we do have some equivalency of values of a servant being purchased and so forth, and what that entailed and how much money. We have to, let's just read, we had read. Yeah, right, go on.
Just one comment back on verse 3. I was thinking about the logistics of it, and how we've talked in the past about how when they reclined at dinner, and how it was like that their front of their body was near the table, and then did we say that their feet were more towards the back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you read this, it could sound like Mary was making a big display here with this the washing of Jesus' feet, but thinking about the logistics of it, I think she did it in a very humble way. It was like she was really in the background. And Jesus was probably, until the aroma started permeating
that's
the room,
right.
Nobody probably really knew what was going on except for Jesus.
And so
that kind of, to me, just points out a little more.
That's very good. That would be pertinent. Very, and that it would be done with unostentation. Yes?
I'm thinking of the hair of her head that she dried his feet with. And hair symbolizing consecration. I was wondering if there would be any tie in there, that all the devotion to the
following in the footsteps of Jesus and so forth. Yes.
And I also like to think of Martha served, so she did her little bit too. She had a very noble trend.
Yes. Both sisters. There's something else that comes up. I don't know if it's going to be in this gospel or not, but showing that he thought very much of Martha too, but in a way you could overlook it. Let her alone. Against the day of my burying hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with you, but me ye have not always. Any comment on those? So it's this is the proper equation of value on this for what was done. This is Jesus' appraisal, and it couldn't have been done better. But from an earthly standpoint, it couldn't have been worse. From a worldly standpoint, yes.
Doesn't this also give us kind of a guiding principle and a safeguard against moving into a social gospel? That principle too, that to our first priorities have to be the Lord's work. Not helping the poor, but it doesn't rule out
that
you
couldn't
help on
the
individual basis.
Yes, that from the standpoint of a group effort as a movement, that it is not our duty to alleviate the poor. As the main mission is to preach the gospel. And also to understand the gospel and to learn the gospel before you preach what you don't know. For the poor always ye have with you, but me ye have not always. And it also shows his foresight, Jesus, that this condition of poverty would prevail throughout the entire age, which is interesting too, because everybody has a sort of a utopian goal to which they, especially in youth, that you aspire or hope to aspire, or the nation to aspire, or that you'll find the place where this is. But that place is dreamland. It's the next stage. It's the kingdom. That's the panacea and the answer.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yes.
It almost suggests here that this was put aside especially just for this purpose, that she was saving it just for this purpose, as it was saying here.
I don't know that it's saying that. For to collect this amount on this occasion, it doesn't indicate to me the way I read it. One way, it could be either way. But if you have something that you've been treasuring up for some other purpose, and then you see this is the, and you change and use it for another purpose, I don't see there's any too much difference. Because when you save up for purpose, you're expending it as you go along. This, to my, I would have the opposite view, personally. That she saved it up for another purpose, and then when she was overwhelmed and wanted to show her devotion and respect for Jesus in doing it that way. Otherwise, she would have been doing it all along the way. She had another motivation and it changed. And I think that's every bit as ennobling as the other. I don't see there's any difference. One is you're doing it as you go along. The other is later. The main thing is, it was an evidence of her respect and love for the truth as it was seen in the person of Jesus. Yet somebody else was.
I just thought of this as being a way of saying Jesus knew her heart condition. She'd been saving this all along, but at a specific moment, because of her heart condition, there'd just be this overwhelming outpouring, contrary to her original purpose. Because she couldn't have truly understood about his burial, even his apostles. as much as he told him he would be dying, it didn't really finish him. Mm-hmm.
I think how the Lord probably is, I think in Jehovah, probably is, put this into her heart and mind at that time, also to reveal Judas's conniving spirit. That it not only proved her a devotion, but his had to have something to trigger him to go and do what he did, in other words, at that moment.
All right, we have to put a stop to the meeting because it's over the hour, about an hour and 5 minutes, I guess.